Greetings, Moonlight citizens. This is your Moonlight King here to let you know this episode of Moonlight Kingdom Reviews will cover The Walking Dead. No, not the used to be good show, but around season 8 turned into real crap TV series. But a 90s film with the likes of Eddie Griffin and Alan Payne set in the Vietnam War. And it'll be covered on this episode of Moonlight Kingdom Reviews in 3, 2, 1. Boom. I love how Eddie Griffin kind of takes the Christopher Walken approach in his movies, where he's basically playing himself if he was in this situation. Like, you never really get the idea that he's playing a character in his films. As much as he is so much, this is Eddie Griffin if he was, I don't know, the manager at a freaking nightclub. Not a manager of a nightclub, the owner of a nightclub in Malcolm and Eddie. Or this is Eddie Griffin if he was Undercover Brother, or as this movie portrays it, this is Eddie Griffin if he was in Vietnam. You know, he's also like the dude, and the cast in general feels more like a 90s movie that the character straight out of a 90s film that happened to be in a 70s movie. But hey, he essentially plays himself, you know, he's just Eddie as a soldier. So the movie is basically this. This platoon of mostly black troops and this one white guy are dropped on this one bit of enemy territory, and they have to reunite with first platoon and to rescue some POWs, right? Basic plan. Drop the heroes on this, into this place. They, in different spots, they reconvene some point in the jungle, and together they storm this POW camp. But the plan goes awry when the place they're supposed to land on is swarmed by the NVA. The guy who was leading them gets capped, you know, and now it falls on the preacher guy, the reverend, to be the man in charge. You know, he's the highest ranking officer and so on, so he's the one calling the shots for the time being. Four black guys and one white guy. It's Reverend, it's Eddie Griffin, Alan Payne, and it's Pip, the one white dude, Reverend, the man in charge, Eddie Griffin, Alan Payne, and that one dude, I'm having trouble remembering his name, man, like Brooks, that's the guy. Brooks, Eddie Griffin's character, Alan Payne's character, Reverend, and Pip, the one white dude. Yeah, that's this team, and they're the ones who are basically the main characters for the rest of the film. You know, it's their movie to carry, and they're the characters we spend the most time with. We get a really cool title drop. It's like the earliest part of this movie. When, they think that their mission is a bit of a bust. Okay, Eddie Griffin is under the impression that this mission is a total wash, because the guy who's supposed to be leading them, he's no longer of the living. They don't know where First Platoon is. Their radio is out. So, like, you know, and they were dropped in a hot LZ that was surrounded by, you know, enemy troops. You know, NVA could be anywhere. So he thinks it's a total bust. We should cancel this. And leads to an argument with the Reverend, who's calling the shots. And Reverend is like, I brought you back from the dead, so it's not your life, it's mine. So head out. And as they're heading out, like, Eddie Griffin turns and is like, fucking walking, like, he's like, damn, we're the fucking Walking Dead. Boom, title drop right there. Yeah, that was, you know, I love when a title drop is worked into the dialogue instead of just feeling like, instead of you clearly being like, they're just saying that to get the movie's title in there somehow, they managed to naturally work it into the dialogue, kind of like Dune 2. Yeah, or in the first Dune, where they naturally weave it into the dialogue to, like, drop the name of the story. Anyway, this movie is critical of the war, as well as the draft and how, like, it takes people fresh out of high school. Like, well, the draft favors people fresh out of high school. Like, Eddie Griffin, like, in his character in this film says, like, it's done because, not because, you know, the candidates are at their physical peak, but mainly because at that age, they're not yet, you know,
smart enough to know everything and are perfect for that kind of service. You know, their minds are not yet fully made. They're still malleable. They can be trained to do whatever. They're kind of the perfect candidates to be, for lack of a better term, brainwashed. And the film also showcases like the different reasons one may have for enlisting, you know, as well as one might, the different reactions someone could have to life as part of infantry or life fighting in Vietnam. And it's showcased in like these flashbacks to what like the members of the platoon were doing. So Alan Payne's character, he joined the military so that his wife and kid can get base housing. You know, they live on the, you know, family members of like, you know, army guys in those days lived on the base. They had like these houses like the family members could live in. See, he wanted that base housing because in the regular world, when he was working a regular job and whatever, he tried to buy a house in a neighborhood that they wouldn't let him on account of him being black, because this was still back in those days when you could willingly deny someone a loan or, you know, payment on a house. It wasn't like he didn't have money either. He did have money. He was like, for the way the movie rents it, the way the movie presents his character, he did have the money to afford the house, and he wanted to buy the house in that neighborhood, you know. It was a nice neighborhood. It was near a school district, all this and that. And the woman tried to come up with any excuse she could to deny him the loan, not the loan, deny him the right to buy the house. And then he just cut through all the crap and like, why don't you just be honest? Why don't you just say, like, you don't want to give it to us because we're black. Like, you don't know me. Like, you don't know me. You just see the color of my skin and immediately be like, you know, I can't give this guy a house, you know, whatever. And he just like leaves. But I don't like what that scene. He like walks up to this one, after he gets mad and he like wants to storm out of the place, he walks up to the security guard and he calls him the N-word. Like, he's like, oh, you're like the house boy, basically. And I'm just thinking like, bro, he didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. He was just standing there. He just happened to be in your way out. You just happen to see him and you think like this dude sold out or something. He's just a guy with a job, man. He's just a guy working 9 to 5. Like, if he had gotten up, he like walked over to you and was like, it's time to go. Then you could say that. But he was just like some dude, man. It's not cool if he said something like that. But anyway, moving on. Pip, the guy, Pip, the white guy, he was a gangster. And he was, oh, Bernie Mac is in this movie, by the way. He was a gangster who was working with his partner, who's played by Bernie Mac, to try and steal some money from these Hispanic gangsters, which ultimately, well, this was a robbery that got botched. Bernie Mac got taken out. And like Pip was on the run. And when he was running, he ran straight into the USMC recruiting office. Now, later in the film, goes crazy and he like almost gets the group killed twice. First time when they find him, and like the second time, like he doesn't get someone killed, but the second time he actively like tries to bite, you know, the Reverend's ear off. And it's clear that this dude is nuts later on, because they look inside his pack and they find like worms and like ears and body parts and stuff. And it's like, okay, this dude has lost it. He has snapped, but the Reverend doesn't want to turn his back on him. And it's teased even in the flashback sequence that he's kind of nuts, because like him and Bernie Mac, they were interrogating this woman to find out where the safe was that they were going to steal from this Hispanic group. And like, so she, like the woman wasn't cooperating, like to the extent that they would like, so he just shot her in the head. And Bernie Mac was like, what the hell is wrong with you, man? It was like, ah, she wasn't gonna tell us anyway, you know. Besides, like, she looked at me like, I don't know, he was basically trying to say like she looked at me like a crap, you know. Like, and Beck was like, and Bernie Mac was mad because like, man, now we'll never know. I mean, we'll never know whether she would have told us anyway. Like, you don't just pop somebody because you think, well, he's not gonna talk. You gotta like work them over, and then if you work them over and they don't respond, then you jump straight to it, man. Like, damn, whatever. 90s Bernie Mac was, he was a good looking dude, man. I'll say that much. He was a decent looking dude. And like, even though he's there for a few minutes, you remember that he was there, because that was like, I don't know, whenever he showed up in a movie, whether it was House Party or How to Be a Player, like, or even Friday, when Bernie Mac was there, you remembered he was there. He could have like a bit part and you'll remember like, wait a minute, Bernie Mac was in this movie, holy crap. And it's always hilarious, man. He never, like, he was good enough. He's a great actor, but he never outshined the leads in the movies that he was in. In this movie, How to Be a Player, or there was that one he did with Jamie Foxx. Like, he had, like, a few minutes in those movies, but he never outshone the leads. as funny as he was, like, yeah, he was the funniest guy in the room when he did show up, but he never made it so, like, damn, you know, like, he never made the leads look bad. They always somehow came out of it looking good, you know? But yeah. Ooh, moving on. The one guy, Eddie Griffin's character, was a meatpacker in his flashback, and he was a bit of a ladies' man before Yeah, you know, he was working as a meat packer, and he got sold out by his buddy. You know, he got sold out by his buddy because he took this piece of meat to a party. No, he took it without asking. And, like, his boss found out, and he told him, like, you know, it's not the meat. It's the fact that you stole it in the first place, man. Like, I can't, you know, if you'd have just asked me, I would have let you have it. But, like, the fact that you stole it means, like, I can't trust you. I can't have someone working for me if I can't trust them. So, yeah, that was that. But with the thing that bothered him the most about this, and a big reason why he seemingly tries to push everyone away and he doesn't want to learn anybody's name, is because, like, the last time he trusted somebody, it was the guy who stabbed him in the back, because he asked his boss, like, after he fired him, like, wait, like, boss, how did you know I was here? And B, how did you know the meat was gone? Is that, like, your friend Harold told me? Like, oh, and so he, you know, he beat that guy up and he went on to, like, join the military. I don't remember if he joined or he got drafted, but he was there. And he says, suck my nuts a lot. You know, it's like his catchphrase, you know, he doesn't like to make friends, you know, in Nam, specifically in Vietnam, he doesn't like to make friends. Well, because of his experience with Harold and because they might just end up dead the next day, you know. So you understand his character and, like, the arc that he goes through as he learns to trust the platoonies with. And, you know, he even says in the movie that he doesn't stick out for, his name's not for anybody but himself, because he would never screw himself. You know, though he goes through an arc later in the film that allows him to change that outlook to be a better guy. And Brooks joined because of a girl. In his flashback, his girlfriend Barbara Jean got asked out by some guy named Rudy Poo-Koo. He calls Rudy Poo-Koo, and she didn't say no. Right there, dude. So let me lay this out for you. If your girlfriend gets asked out by another dude and she doesn't say no, I have a boyfriend, dude, leave her. Like, for real. This woman is for the streets. She don't like you. If she gets asked out by some guy and entertains the idea and doesn't immediately tell him, like, hey, I have a boyfriend, no thank you, that you gotta leave, man. You gotta get the hell out of there. She does not like you. Like, forget love. She does not like you, man. If she entertains the idea of going out with some other guy just because he asked, no. Oh, so this is a dude who works at a hardware store, and this chick, like, dude, like, so the Rudy Poo-Koo guy, he works at a hardware store, and he asked her out, and, man, dude, she kept talking up this dude. She kept speaking up for the guy, like, yeah, you know, he works at a hardware store, but damn, at least he has a job. Like you live in a basement, like, you live in your parents' basement. And he was like, also, what's wrong with living in, Brooks rightly points out, like, what's wrong with living in the basement, man? Like, you know, his parents could rent this place out and get decent money, but I live here for free. Like, dude, yeah, I get it. It's a basement, but it's a really freaking nice basement. It's not a stereotypical cobwebs and dust, no lights. No, man, like, the walls are painted blue. There's, like, some decent lighting, a nice bed, and it's practically a whole room. You wouldn't know it wasn't, like, you wouldn't know it was a basement by looking at it if you didn't see the stairs leading up, you know? You wouldn't even know this was a basement if you couldn't see the stairs. So what's wrong with this place? It's free room and board. Like, what kind of, like, dude, like, she's nagging at him, like, oh, yeah, this guy has a job, and, you know, you don't seem to be going anywhere. Like, you know, she's talking about this dude, and she's asking Brooks, like, whether or not he's going to be something. And I'm just thinking, yo, there's the asking, man, like, are you going to be something? Like, what are you going to do, man? Like, the guy asking me out has a job. Like, what do you got? Like, what the actual hell, lady? This is your boyfriend. What the hell? This gold digging, man, forget it. Ugh, right there, man. That was a big red flag. Right. He joined the Marines for her. He joined the Marines to impress her and, like, try to make some kind of life for her. right? And this backfires horribly later. You'll find out. But right there, man, that was a big red flag, and he should have known that she was no good. Ah, yeah. Who's left? Oh, that's right. In the Reverend's flashback, the last flashback, arguably the most tragic. In the Reverend's flashback, he was just that, a reverend. You know, went to church, did sermons and all that. One day, he came home from work, and he found his wife, you know, taking it from the rear from some dude. Unlike Tim Robbins in Nothing to Lose, he actually did something about it when he went downstairs, grabbed a revolver out of the drawer, and he, let's say he helped them finish. He helped them both finish with all the living. Yeah. So he got charged. The lawyer said it was a crime of passion, temporary insanity, you know, all the legal mumbo jumbo, and he got away with it. I think the deal was he wouldn't go to jail, prompted that he go to the army. Like, I think there was a deal like, oh, yeah, you know, crime of passion, whatever, whatever, you know, you're remanded to military service or something. I don't know. I think that was what was happening. Or that he got off scot-free and decided there was nothing for him, so he just sent himself into military service. But, like, you know, that's his backstory. And anyway, and it's, like, it's pretty good, but there's a moment in this story where, like, his friend lines up all the presidents on the back of coins, and he says, look, and he noticed that Abe Lincoln's coin is facing the right side and all the other presidents are facing the left side, and it's like his friend comments, they turn their back on one of their own for freeing the slaves, you know, like, make sure that doesn't happen to you. You know, that kind of is what happened, though. I mean, his congregation most definitely turned their back on him and all his teachings after he shot his wife, because, you know, you can't get up, you can't go back to being a reverend, you can't exactly go back and preach the good book if you're convicted of committing a horrible crime like this. So, yeah. That's his flashback, and we cut back to, like, the present day. The flashbacks really do a good job of, like, adding some level of levity to some moments and breaking up the scene. Like, the movie really nails the 70s scenes with, like, the clothes, the music, and even the hairstyles of the characters in the flashbacks. Plus, the action in this movie isn't the biggest selling point, though there are some great set pieces between the platoon and the NVA and the fighting in the jungles, in the ruins, and it really nailed, like, the idea, like, well, these guys could be anywhere. They could be up in the trees, they could be hiding behind some rocks, or there could be traps set all over. It nailed that part. And the best parts of the movie are, like, the quiet moments where the characters are just talking amongst themselves. There's a lot of talking, you know, like, this movie isn't quite, it's not Saving Private Ryan, you know, like, it's not like where, like, there's this, like, you know, it doesn't have, like, $100 million or whatever to give us this huge scene, like Normandy landing or whatever, but it can have a few action scenes spread out here and there, with a lot of talking scenes, and those talking scenes are, like, the best scenes of the movie. Ah. So, yeah. Yeah, the best parts of the movie are the scenes where the characters do just talk about themselves. So, as the movie goes on, after they find Pip, you know, they tie him up, and they're taking him with him after he tried to take them out. They found out he'd lost his mind. But Reverend doesn't want to, you know, leave him out here. You know, he's a Marine, he's an American, we're going to take care of him, whatever. So, in the middle of the night, while Reverend and Alan Payne's character are off finding out where the POW camp is, Brooks and Eddie Griffin are just sitting there talking to themselves. And Brooks finds out that his girlfriend, you know, the one who was infatuated with Rudy Prukou, she left him for that guy. And she, in the note, you know, thing is, he joined for her, right? And she was impressed when he said he was joining. And in the letter, like, when she tells him she's leaving, she calls him a warmonger. Like, what the hell? Oh, dude, that's freaking, I told you it would backfire. And then, you know, so Brooks is like, man, you were right. You know, like, your decision to, like, push everybody away, not get close to anyone here, you know, it's so right, man. And Eddie Griffin sees right through this. He's like, oh, nah, you're only saying that, you know, like, you want to be me tonight because tonight your name is Dear John and Jody's got your girl and gone. Yeah, nobody's got a pink slip on the pussy. You're going to regret not getting with her because she screwed you over in the worst way. In your moment of truth when you needed her most. Like, damn, dude. he has this whole like speech about like how women love messing with men. I don't know what it is. Call it penis envy. Like just, it's hilarious. It's misogynistic and a little sexist in some places, but it is hilarious. And in the context of Brooks's story, accurate. Yeah, and the two bond over this one Marvin Gaye song that Brooks liked, and it was playing in the background during his flashback scene that this Marvin Gaye song, Heard It Through the Grapevine. Yeah, because the situation kind of, it's eerily fitting that that's the song that he remembers because it fits here. It's like, bet you wonder how I knew, impromptu song about to go, about your plans to make me blue. With some other guy you knew before. Between the two of us guys, you know I love you more. It took, and they both start singing together like, it took me by surprise, I must say, when I found out. And it's hilarious because it's broken up when like Reverend and Alan Payne's character walk up and they're like, You two are crazy. Like, just sitting and singing in the... You're lucky you didn't get shot making all this noise. So Brooks tells him, like, man, Bob and Jean left me. And Reverend's like, good. You're too stupid to have a girlfriend. Oh, man. This movie is not a comedy. But it's hilarious in places, man. Damn. Whew. And, you know, after this little, you know, singing session between him and Brooks, you know, that's when Eddie Griffin decides, like, know what, like, you and me, buddy, we're gonna make it out of here. This is my man, this is my pal. I'm gonna do whatever I can to get him out. You know, he's actually like opening up and like, you know, he's just made a new friend and he's gonna stick with him through thick and thin, no matter what. The movie's pretty, no, it gets dark. They discover the POW camp. It's empty. The POWs are all gone. And inside they find Pip with a hostage. He takes out the hostage. And Reverend, he takes him out. After he does, Brooks is kind of shocked. He's like, damn, man. You took out Pip. And Reverend's like, what do you think he was going to do? Kiss him? Like, for real, if you take Eddie Griffin out of this movie's not that funny anymore, man. Like, if you take Eddie Griffin out of the movie's not that fun either. Like, there's not a lot to enjoy about the movie that he's not a part of. So if you think about the movie, you take out a lot of the important scenes, but, like, there is this good scene in the moment after Brooks is like, man, you took out Tiff, and Rev tells him, like, he has this amazing line where after he takes out Pip, he's like, you are a killer. An assassin is like, get this straight, man. Like, you're a killer. You're an assassin. You're an executioner. By any other word, a Marine. All right? Like, that's what we do. Don't get it twisted. Like, that's what we do here. So he says to Brooks, the Lord doesn't give you what you want. He gives you what you need. The rest is up to you. Basically saying, like, the world doesn't owe you anything. You just got to make do with what you got. That's what we got here. Like, basically, the theme of... That's what he's trying to say about this whole mission. You know, like, you know, yeah, we were dropped in a hot LZ. Yes, our platoon leader is gone. Yes, first platoon is gone. Yes, this place is empty. But we got to do what we got to do. You know, like, we're not owed anything. We just got to adapt. You know, like, we just got to take it as it goes, man. Like, we're not owed anything. If stuff doesn't work out, that's not on any higher power. It's up to us to like do something about it and fix the situation. So yeah, the final firefight is a pretty tense one. You know, as they find out like, hey, there's a chopper coming to pick y'all up, and you know, you got to get from here to there, and there's like a whole lot of dense jungle between here and there. So they hoof it, and it's a pretty tense fight because it's like, you know, you don't. It's this mad dash for the chopper that's generally tense, and like Under Siege music starts playing. Like, I kid you not, man. Like, I'm watching this movie, I'm listening to music, and I'm like, wait a minute, this sounds vaguely familiar. What? Hey, wait a minute, this is music from Under Siege, like playing throughout here. Like, what the heck? What's going on here? Like,
this movie and Under Siege have the same like action music playing through it. It's like, whatever. Maybe it was scored by the same guy. Who knows? Either way, man, it's pretty good. It's used well. Brooks goes down. He's taken out. And like you can tell Eddie Griffin's character, like, even though they were only friends for like a little bit, he did grow to care for him. Because when he goes down, it's like, no! Damn it! And he like just guns down. The dude's responsible. And when the groups get separated, he actually goes back to save the Reverend. And it's like it or not, I'm saving your ass. Now let's go. And, you know, despite the fact that they've been going at each other for the whole movie, they were seemingly at each other's throats. By the end of it, they learn to respect and care about one another as the plane takes them back to safety. The film ends with like this black and white slideshow that shows what everyone got up to after the movie. You know, Reverend opened up a place to help, you know, lost boys, and, you know, Eddie Griffin's character opened up he bought out the meatpacking place that he used to work for. You know, Alan Payne's character continued to serve and like up until he retired. It was kind of a great ending for all. And this movie was a pretty solid movie. I'd give it, man, it's pretty rewatchable. It's got some rewatchable moments to it, and it's a severely underrated film as it is. The scenes, there were plenty of scenes in it that made me laugh. Its opinions on the war, not like opinions, but like its view on the war and how it targets it, even as like, well, the characters have discussions like, well, what makes you think like they recruit in like the inner city, you know, like they're the kind of people that, it's basically the movie trying to say like, these are the kind of people we want to recruit because, you know, they're malleable and they're not that educated enough. So it's like people we don't mind sacrificing. If they don't make it, they don't make it. But if they do, like we can train them as much as we can without, you know, fear of knowing that thing, what is and isn't okay. Like, we can train them to do whatever. If they don't make it, heck, we're not really missing anything. Like, we haven't really lost anything. That's kind of like what's going on here. But like the movie overall, I'd say 7 out of 10 for me. I liked it. I would recommend it. I would rewatch it again. So yeah, that's my opinion on The Walking Dead. 1995's The Walking Dead. And yeah, this has been Moonlight Kingdom Reviews. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, all them nice things. And I'll see you on the next one.